This series by UBS is presented by Automated Voices and may include adaptive narration.
Hi, I'm Belinda from the UBS Chief Investment Office. It's Friday, the 24th of July, and the time is 7 a.m. in New York. Equities are mixed with the latest U.S. close weaker, Europe firmer, and Japan sharply lower. At the latest close, the S&P 500 fell 1.2% and the Nasdaq lost 1.9% respectively. The stocks Europe 600 rose 0.4% and Switzerland's SMI gained 0.5%. In Asia, the Nikkei 225 dropped 2.7% and the Shanghai Composite lost 1.6%. In foreign exchange, the euro buys 1.139 US dollars while the dollar buys 0.82 Swiss francs. On rates, the 10-year US Treasury yield is unchanged at 4.7% on the day. Brent crude is down 2% at $99 a barrel and gold is unchanged at $4,051 an ounce. And that's all for the market update. Now let's take a more detailed look at the latest developments.
Thanks, Belinda. What's driving this second straight week of declines for global equities?
Hi, Aaron. Good question. Well, global equities are on track to post a second week of declines. Escalating U.S.-Iran tensions have pushed Brent crude above $100 a barrel and stoked inflation fears, while higher AI capital spending has intensified investor worries over hyperscalers' returns on investment. The 10-year U.S. Treasury yield has risen to 4.7%, which is the highest level since January 2025.
And how did Alphabet add to those concerns around AI spending?
Well, Alphabet's shares fell more than 7% on Thursday after it again raised its estimates for 2026 capital spending to $1,095 to $205 billion. Its free cash flow for the second quarter also fell into negative territory for the first time in the company's history.
So beyond tech, how much has the renewed escalation in the Middle East been weighing on sentiment?
Yeah, sentiment has definitely been dented by further escalation in the Middle East. Iran-aligned Houthis attacked vessels in the Red Sea and disrupted another vital waterway for global energy supplies. President Donald Trump vowed major military punishment for both Iran and the Houthis if there were more attacks on shipping, and the U.S. and Iran continue to exchange strikes. The latest data showed loading activity within the Gulf falling to 2.5 million barrels per day over the past 7 days versus 6 million barrels per day over the past 30 days. Floating storage of tankers in the Gulf has started to increase again to around 80 to 90 million barrels from roughly 35 to 40 million barrels 2 weeks ago as the number of tankers crossing the Strait of Hormuz has fallen. For comparison, more than 180 million barrels of oil were stranded in the Gulf in early May at the height of the war.
So, how are you thinking about the risk of further escalation and the outlook for energy flows from here?
The risk of further escalation does remain elevated, and a retest of oil price highs from earlier this year can't be ruled out if military action intensifies, including strikes on energy infrastructure. In our base case, we expect energy flows through the strait to recover over time, even if they are unlikely to return to pre-conflict levels, because mounting economic pressures on both sides should create a mutual interest in re-establishing shipping. Prolonged disruption of energy supplies would add further pressure on U.S. household budgets at a time when affordability is already a key concern, while reduced or minimal income from oil exports could impede the Iranian government's ability to provide vital goods to its population.
And what does that mean for inflation and the outlook for Fed policy?
Well, we think inflationary pressure should subside as the year progresses, and that makes an aggressive tightening cycle unlikely in the near term, in our view. The U.S. June Consumer Price Index showed that monthly underlying inflation, which excludes volatile items like energy and food, fell for the first time since 2020. That supports our view that Fed policy is already sufficiently restrictive and that inflation should continue to trend lower without the need for a meaningful further increase in rates.
Okay, and coming back to AI, what should investors watch from next week's big tech earnings?
Earnings from Microsoft, Meta, and Amazon next week should offer further insight into hyperscalers' capital spending commitments and the durability of their revenue growth. Even so, limited visibility on capital spending beyond 2027 and greater investor demand for spending discipline could continue to weigh on risk appetite despite solid AI demand.
So given all of that uncertainty, what should well-diversified long-term investors do now?
For well-diversified long-term investors, staying invested remains the most effective strategy for navigating current uncertainty. Given robust earnings growth and an improving cyclical backdrop, we see attractive equity opportunities across sectors and regions, and we think investors should broaden exposure to capture a wider range of growth drivers. We also expect bond yields to fall, and we believe quality fixed income offers an appealing combination of income, diversification, and medium-term return potential.
And for investors looking to strengthen portfolio resilience, where could they look?
So for investors looking to further boost the resilience of their portfolios, they might consider capital preservation strategies, broad exposure to commodities, and allocations to alternatives such as hedge funds.
Right. And on capital preservation strategies, why might they matter here?
Well, given a fairly constructive medium-term outlook alongside near-term uncertainty, investors can manage downside risk by combining diversified core equity exposure with capital preservation strategies that are designed to limit losses while still retaining participation in further gains. That may be particularly relevant for investors with concentrated portfolios, near-term spending needs, or a lower tolerance for drawdowns. Relatively low implied volatility, especially in U.S. Eurozone and Swiss equity indices, can also make capital preservation strategies more attractive.
And what's the case for broad commodities at this point?
Absolutely. And renewed disruption to energy flows does strengthen the case for broad commodity exposure as both a source of return and an inflation hedge. Energy can help buffer portfolios if shipping or production disruptions persist. Industrial metals should remain supported by investment in AI and electrification, and agricultural commodities have upside potential given El Niño-related risks. While gold's near-term outlook is more challenging, we continue to view it as a useful strategic diversifier. Investors can also consider an active approach because commodity leadership may rotate as geopolitical conditions, inventories, and demand expectations shift.
And how do hedge funds fit into that resilience toolkit?
Well, hedge funds delivered a strong first half of 2026, with HFR data showing the strongest first half performance in 5 years. Elevated stock level dispersion and sharp swings across rates, commodities, and currencies created opportunities that flexible and unconstrained managers were well positioned to exploit. We think the need for diversification and alpha generation adds to the appeal of hedge funds, and investors with the appropriate risk profile should consider hedge fund exposure within their broader set of portfolio building blocks. At present, we favor low net equity hedge, merger arbitrage, discretionary macro, multi-strategy platforms, and selective Asia-focused allocations.
What final consideration should investors keep in mind before using alternatives or structured investments?
Ultimately, investors should make sure they have the ability and willingness to tolerate the risks related to alternative and structured investments, including illiquidity and complexity.
Great. Thanks, Belinda. Now let's turn to what else caught our attention today. Trump's new tariffs are now in effect. The administration is imposing new 10-12.5% tariffs on imports from 60 trading partners under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, citing inadequate enforcement to prevent forced labor in their supply chains to the detriment of American workers. The new tariffs are now effective and cover more than 99% of U.S. imports. They also come as the temporary 10% global tariff levied under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974 expires. Fuel, certain food items, and fertilizers are exempt, as are products such as automobiles, metals, and drugs that are already covered by separate industry-specific levies. Items covered by the North American Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada are also excluded. Our view is that the move was telegraphed last month when the administration released the outcome of its forced labor investigation. And we think a second set of Section 301 tariffs tied to excess manufacturing capacity could come later this year. But elevated inflation and persistent affordability concerns are likely to limit how aggressively the administration can raise trade barriers without putting more pressure on household budgets. We expect the U.S. effective tariff rate to remain in a 10 to 15% range this year, which is not far above the current level of around 10.4%. That should mean the earlier boost to goods inflation from tariffs continues to fade through the rest of the year, as recent data suggest, and allows for further core disinflation. The European Central Bank delivered a hawkish hold. The ECB left the deposit rate unchanged at 2.25% at its July meeting after a 25 basis point increase in June. The decision was widely expected, but the tone of the statement and press conference was hawkish. With the U.S.-Iran conflict re-escalating, policymakers remain concerned that higher energy prices could feed through to broader inflation. ECB President Christine Lagarde said uncertainty remains high and that the Governing Council needs more evidence on how the energy shock is being transmitted before taking further action. The ECB also repeated its meeting-by-meeting approach and gave no explicit guidance on the path for rates. Our view is that the renewed rise in energy prices has shifted the balance of risks back toward higher inflation, and we continue to expect the ECB to raise rates by 25 basis points in September, unless energy prices retreat materially. Even so, market pricing for a series of hikes that would take the deposit rate toward 3% over the next 12 months looks somewhat aggressive to us. Headline inflation has recently come in slightly below the ECB's June projections. Underlying price growth remains contained, and inflation expectations are still anchored. Policymakers are also likely to stay mindful of growth risks, with the ECB noting that near-term growth is likely to be modest. We therefore expect only limited further tightening and continue to expect bond yields to fall over the next 12 months. We see value in euro fixed income, favor medium tenors, and believe investors can selectively extend into longer-dated, high-quality eurozone government bonds. We also see eurozone equities as attractive, supported by improving earnings growth, a bottoming industrial cycle, and structural investment in AI, electrification, defense, and energy security. Looking ahead to Monday, the 27th of July, the focus will be Germany's IFO business climate for July and U.S. durable goods orders for June. And that's it for today, and we look forward to bringing you the latest House View update tomorrow.
This material has been prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS Switzerland AG, regulated by FINMA in Switzerland, its subsidiaries or affiliates, collectively referred to as UBS. The investment views have been prepared in accordance with legal requirements designed to promote the independence of investment research. This material is for your information only and is not intended as an offer or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any investment or other specific product. The analysis contained herein does not constitute a personal investment recommendation or take into account the particular investment objectives, investment strategies, financial situation, and needs of any specific recipient. This material may not be reproduced or copies circulated without prior authority of UBS. Please visit www.ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer to read the full legal disclaimer applicable to this material.